This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Imagine there's no heaven. Sees if you try.
On the gay marriage, no religion, legalization and taxation on marijuana platform.
That was Brad Pitt, one of our secular celebrity heroes, by the way, in an interview on August 13th on the Today Show, once again affirming his lack of religious belief, joking he could never run for office because it would be on the pro-gay, no religion platform. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which is the nation's largest organization of non-believers, free thinkers, people who are atheists, who are agnostics, who choose none of the above, the religious skeptics, those of us who are part of the fastest growing segment of the religious identification in this country, those who are called nuns.
We have a fascinating interview coming up on the second half of today's show. It's a man who went into the far reaches of the Amazon in order to convert heathens into Christians and ended up being deconverted himself.
Our guest will be Daniel Everett. He's the author of an amazing book, which I just finished reading this week. The book is called Don't Sleep, There Are Snakes, Life and Language in the Amazonian Jungle. It was published last year by Pantheon Books.
In a few minutes, we do want to talk a little bit about the disturbing trend of public officials wearing religion on their sleeves. We'll talk about a comment that new Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor made at her formal welcome at the White House last week. But we want to talk first about a bizarre museum in Kentucky dedicated to promoting creationism, which of course means promoting Genesis. And Dan, you just toured that museum, right?
I spoke at the Secular Student Alliance Conference a couple of weeks ago in Ohio, and we took a day trip down just south of Cincinnati, right up in northern Kentucky, to the Creation Museum. It's a huge, multi-million-dollar, multi-story kind of Disneyland complex by this group called Answers in Genesis and Ken Hovind, and these they're not just creationists; they're young Earth creationists.
And now, when you say we, how many of you were there?
Well, at the time, we were led by science blogger P.Z. Myers. More than 300 non-believing, skeptical, secular people. We all had
most of them students.
Most of them were students, yeah, from the Secular Student Alliance and others. And we had a little tag on identifying who we were. And we were all wearing, we were polite. I wore my Darwin T-shirt and my out-of-the-closet atheist hat. And they all wore some statements, but they were well-behaved. And we went in, and, you know, I debated going to that place because, you know, it's $25 to get in. However, they arranged a group rate for us at $10 each.
So they only made $3,000.
Well, but they did have to hire extra security because they were afraid of us rowdy non-believers showing up. Actually, we were very polite, and it was actually an enjoyable time. At first, I was disappointed because I thought it was going to be a museum. I thought there was going to be a lot of like fossils and things. You know, a museum is supposed to have these.
A creationist museum, Dan.
Well, and then they had these sort of models of dinosaurs and things. So kids would like it. You can actually get on a dinosaur with a saddle and ride the dinosaur because they believe the Earth is 6,000 years old and that humans and dinosaurs were together. And
now, when you say kids would like it, you're not endorsing this museum, right, Dan?
Well, if you want to go to this kind of silly Fred Flintstone place, yeah. I mean, but you're giving money to a right-wing religious group, so... If there are any born-again Christian listeners here and you want to have a silly time, then yeah, that might be the place for you. But I was disappointed, but then I started laughing, like, ha ha, isn't this funny? But then at the end, I got kind of sad because they are really taking it seriously. It's huge. I have a photograph of me in the Garden of Eden, a huge Garden of Eden, and you can see Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. And for some reason, Eve's long back hair is always in front of her. I could never understand, you know, why they would do that. But In the bushes behind Adam and Eve, there's a dinosaur.
Oh, come on. I mean, this is absurd.
You can walk through the Grand Canyon. You can see how it was.
And are there dinosaurs in there?
Well, you can see how the Grand Canyon was formed in, I forget what it was, 4 weeks or whatever. You can go walk through them building Noah's Ark, and you see these. I thought I was really insensitive. They had these animatronic people, ancient Israelites, like sewing the ark, you know, sewing and hammering. And they're all talking in this stereotypical Eastern New York, Eastern European Slavic Jewish accent,
Brooklyn.
Which they never would have said back then. But they're talking about how God, you know, all these plants. And these displays they had there were, it was all just a big Sunday school religious tract. On the left side, it said, human reason says, and then it lists some actually kind of basic stuff about science, right? Which I thought, hey, that's okay. But on the right, it said, but the word of God says, and then it tries to line up all of scientific discovery and scientific facts to fit into the word of God.
It's except evolution, which is the whole point.
Well, they do believe in what they call microevolution within species, but not macroevolution between species.
Well, I think this sounds very disturbing because it sounds like a big magnet for children, as you said, and all these people are going to be flocking to this museum and being indoctrinated as early, you know, as children, and this is going to stay with them. And we already have this country with 50% or more of adults rejecting evolution. So isn't this, you know, very distressing?
Well, they have a lot of money, and it is a private place, and of course they can espouse whatever nonsense they want at their own private place. It's like going into a church, basically.
But isn't it kind of scary that they would have that kind of money?
There were people traveling on vacation from all over the country, families that were making that their focal point of their vacation. And one family said the fact that we non-believers were there, it wrecked their vacation, those poor people. They had to stand in line with people wearing pro-Darwin shirts.
Well, so I guess what you're giving us is a cautionary tale.
If you don't mind spending a little bit of money and for a laugh, that's one thing. But boy, it's really sad to see how they twist themselves into a pretzel to defend the. It's totally upside down. Usually, science starts with observation, evidence, data, and facts, and then tries to find an explanation that fits those facts. But at that place, it's upside down. They start with the explanation that's a given from above, and then they try to make all the data fit to the explanation. And it's really weird how they show the lines of evolution in primates and hominids and different things, that humans started at one point, and there's just a straight line to where we are today. There's actually no branching and no evolution in our species.
And that they believe the Earth is 6,000 years old.
6 to 10,000, yeah.
Now, when you came back from this, the first thing you said to me was, it starts off as creationism, but the whole thing really is just Genesis in the Bible.
It is. Yeah, it's all just like one huge multi-million dollar religious Sunday school tract.
Protestant basically. Fundamentalist.
Yeah, and even on the walls there were things like, what are you teaching in your church? Assuming that everybody coming to that is a church member and that this is their dogma.
They probably were, except for you 300. Well, now I want to change the subject and for a minute and remind listeners that it is time to sign up for the National Convention of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. It's coming up in late November in Seattle. Early November. And our headliner is Air America host Ron Reagan. And of course, we all know he grew up in the first family, and he's now one of today's most progressive commentators on the political scene. And ever since his father was elected president, Ron Reagan has been giving interviews, talking very openly and unabashedly about being an atheist. So we're really delighted he'll be there.
And besides Ron Reagan, we will have science fiction legend Ursula K. Le Guin. She's another non-believer, and what an innovator she has been. She's agreed to accept the Freedom From Religion Foundation's Emperor Has No Clothes Award. This gold-plated award, which was made for us by the same company that makes the Oscars, we reserve it for public figures who tell it like it is about religion. Like the kid in the Hans Christian Andersen fairy tale who said the emperor has no clothes.
And other authors who will be there who have been interviewed previously on this radio show do include Los Angeles Times reporter, former reporter, William Lobdell.
He was the religion reporter.
Very fascinating story. He's also going to receive an Emperor Has No Clothes Award. Jennifer Hecht, who's author of Doubt, A History. Barry Cosman, who I'm really looking forward to hearing. He's the principal researcher of the American Religious Identification Survey, which has shown steadily in the 2000s that 15% of the U.S. population is non-religious.
And it's growing.
And growing. And he also studies secular trends at Trinity University. And we're also going to hear from author Phil Zuckerman, who wrote Society Without God, and he's going to speak on the goodness of godlessness.
So make your plans now to attend. It's the weekend of November 6th through 8th, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, November 6th through 8th in Seattle, Washington. It'll be a lot of fun. You can find out more about the convention at our website, ffrf.org. Go to the Free Thought Outreach link and get all the details.
And we'll be back in a minute to listen to a comment that we think you should hear, a comment by new Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor. And then we'll have an interview that we've been looking forward to very much with missionary turned atheist, the linguist Daniel Everett, who became a non-theist, he says, thanks in part to the, how do you say it, Dan?
The Piraha.
The Amazonian community he sought to convert to Christianity. It's a very cool story, so stay tuned.
Hi, my name is Ann O'Day, and I'm from Mundelein, Illinois, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
Margaret Sanger's motto was, "No gods, no masters." This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. Coming up in a few minutes, the linguist Daniel Everett, who went to the Amazon with his family to convert the Piraha tribe, but it worked the other way around. It's a fascinating story. You don't want to miss this.
We promised to air a news clip of Sonia Sotomayor that you may have missed last week.
I ask not just my family and friends, but I ask all Americans to wish me divine guidance and wisdom.
Well, the rest of her speech that took place on August 12th in the East Room in the White House was actually a very lovely and thoughtful speech. But boy, did this remark jar. Because our Constitution, which is the one she invoked otherwise very reverentially in her remarks, was adopted without the pretense of divine guidance. And there were no prayers at the Constitutional Convention, despite the religious right myths to the contrary. And the Constitution that our founders adopted was and is entirely secular. There is no God in the Constitution. There is no divine guidance from the Constitution. The sovereignty is invested in we the people, not in a God or a Pope or anything divine or transcendental.
It's really disappointing when our elected chosen representatives...
Well, she wasn't elected, but...
Well, but still, our elected representatives picked her, nominated and confirmed her to hold one of the highest posts in the land. And then she says she's not capable. She needs divine guidance. It's like... We've said this before on the show a lot of times. If I were getting on an airplane and I saw one of the pilots praying, I would get right back off again because I would think, aren't you capable? Aren't you up to the job that we've asked you to do? So it's besides that, the fact that she seems to be suggesting this job is too big for me, I need help from above, it's also just the insult to the millions of us who don't believe in divine guidance.
And it is concerning that our new Supreme Court Justice asked, in her words, as you said, Dan, all Americans to wish me divine guidance and wisdom.
Well, we wish that she would have her own wisdom to stand on her own two feet.
And to get back to that all, that is the most disturbing part of what she said, because as you pointed out, Dan, all Americans do not believe in a God or divine guidance. And we don't think that the deity that's spelled out in the Bible was very wise either. And, you know, she's in her mid-50s, and Sonia Sotomayor hasn't read the American Religious Identification Survey coverage. She doesn't know that 15% of us are non-religious. She doesn't care that many of us do not believe in a God. Why, you know, she says all, and where does that leave those of us who reject the idea of a deity, who believe in the natural world and not in the supernatural world, who have good intellectual solid reasons for saying, show us some evidence, it's not there. And so this is... you know, it is insulting. It's an affront. And what concerns me in particular as a plaintiff with you, Dan, in several lawsuits that could wind up before the Supreme Court, is she'll be making decisions on these symbolic problems that we are suing over. For example, we have our new lawsuit about the engraving, against the engraving of the words "In God We Trust" and the religious pledge of allegiance, you know, that says under God, at the visitor center, what if our lawsuit ends up before the Supreme Court? And here's Sonia Sotomayor, who doesn't even know there are atheists or doesn't think that they should be included in her speeches. And what about Michael Newdow's cases and ours with him against the religious pledge of allegiance?
Or the amicus brief that we just filed this last month.
And also our very hot National Day of Prayer case, which the Obama administration is fighting tooth and nail. It's in the district court, where we really are getting to the heart of these myths that our country was founded on God, that they prayed at the Constitutional Convention. These are very debilitating kinds of myths that hurt the law. And I guess that I'm concerned because all along we were unhappy that President Obama did not realize we already had over-dominance on the Supreme Court of Roman Catholics. We have had a five Catholic bloc, and he appointed a sixth, and that does not show diversity. And although I'm sure she will be much more liberal than the other five, and they are Scalia, Thomas, Roberts, Alito, and Kennedy, who seems to, they use a magnet and lure him over to their side on many of these issues now. But like them, she was parochial school educated. And this is a great handicap, unless someone really uses her mind and reason and seeks out the views of the unorthodox. And I would say that someone could not make a statement like that had they not been parochial school educated. That it's just very concerning.
Well, there is no such thing as divine guidance. And if there were, why do believers not agree with each other about what that is? What we need in this country is constitutional guidance. We've already got what we need. We have the Constitution. We have the law. We have secular principles. We don't need divine guidance. If Sotomayor wants to go to her church or a private family meeting and say those things privately,
fine.
That's one thing. But in the East Wing of the White House,
to ask
making
all Americans
an
to pray
official
for her
position, that is crossing the line.
Now, one thing I can say in her favor is the first vote that she has taken so far was against the death penalty, which is biblically, you know, promoted. So that's hopeful.
Was to delay it, yes. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be back after the break for the second half of Free Thought Radio to talk with a missionary turned atheist who learned to reject religion in part by the example of the Piraha people on the Maisi River in the Amazon, people that he went originally to convert. So stay tuned.
Find out more about Free Thought Radio and the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. Speaking freely, thinking freely.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker, and this is the second half of Free Thought Radio.
And we have on the phone with us from Chicago, Daniel Everett. He is the chair of languages, literatures, and cultures at Illinois State. And he's an author of a new book. Well, it came out last year by Pantheon Books. The book is called Don't Sleep, There Are Snakes, Life and Language in the Amazonian Jungle. Daniel Everett first went to the Amazon in 1977 as a missionary with the Summer Institute of Linguistics, primarily to learn the language so that he can translate the Bible into the Piraha, and I hope I'm saying this right, the Piraha language. But something happened while he was down there. So welcome to Free Thought Radio, Daniel.
Hi, good to be with you.
Well, what a privilege to talk with you. I just finished your book just this last week. And what an adventure, what an exploration, what a lot of science, culture, religion, a lot of personal danger to your life. A fascinating, exciting read, which was just right down my alley. I used to be a missionary, too, but nothing like that. So tell us what happened.
Well, what happened was I starting all the way back at the beginning of my life as a Christian, I converted to Christianity at 17 in 1968 in Southern California, and decided I wanted to be a missionary because the people who had helped me convert to Christianity were all missionaries in Brazil. And so I did the training I needed to do to be a missionary, graduated from Moody Bible Institute, and took off down to Brazil to meet the Piraha people. And I just assumed they would be standing on the banks of the river waiting for us to come tell them about God, and got there and found out that, in fact, they weren't shopping for God of any kind, not even one, an indigenous God, and they really didn't need or want what we had to tell them, and that led to a. In fact, they had a way of life that challenged me deeply and led to a deconversion eventually in my own life.
Now, if it weren't for the snakes and the tarantulas and the other river dangers out there, it sounds like a kind of a peaceful, kind of a utopian way to live down the way those people are so happy. They have no rituals, no creeds, no central government, no... what is their culture like?
Well, I mean, for the first few years I was there, trying to learn the language and get behind the values that they held, understanding... I thought they were... They look like a bunch of people on a campout. I just couldn't figure out, you know, what it was that they did until I started going into the jungle with them and realizing how much tremendous knowledge of the flora and fauna and survival and behavior of animals that they had about their environment. But they live a very calm life. I mean, obviously they face difficulties. Often when I describe them, people think, well, that's okay because they don't face any difficulties. But as you said, there are snakes and there's malaria. There are all kinds of diseases and death that they struggle with. Every Piraha has seen people die and has had a very hard life. And yet through this hard physical existence, they've maintained this peacefulness and enjoyment of life that is really astounding.
And the unscrupulous... Brazilian traders that come up and down the river trying to cheat them and all of that.
Yeah, there's a real difficulty with the fact that, you know, they're not left alone. I mean, people are always coming there trying to exploit them, and even well-meaning people like missionaries and government workers wind up being more of an interference in their life than just about anything else. They're a very sweet and accepting people. That doesn't mean that they don't have their own values and that they're not good anthropologists themselves. They recognize what people are after, and they can judge people pretty quickly, but they're just very accepting of other different people.
Now, wasn't your goal that these people had never read the Bible because their language had never been conquered? It had never been interpreted for them. Is that right?
That's right. Missionaries had worked with them. I mean, the first missionary contact with them was in 1784. The Catholic missionaries, I don't remember if it was, I think it was the Jesuits, went there in 1784 and abandoned them very quickly as the most recalcitrant group in the Amazon. And they couldn't make any headway. And so SIL went there in 59, and we were the third SIL team to go there to try to learn the language and make headway where no one else had made any progress.
What is SLI again?
Oh, sorry. SIL is the name of what used to be the largest Protestant missionary organization in the world. They originally were the Summer Institute of Linguistics. Now it doesn't stand for anything, really. It's just SIL International. But they are known in the U.S. as Wycliffe Bible Translators.
Oh, yes.
And so they abroad they present themselves as a scientific organization rather than a missionary organization. It's just that every member of SIL also has to be a member of Wycliffe Bible Translators, committed to Bible translation.
And how old were you when you first went there?
I was in 1977. I was 26 years old when I got there with my family.
So and your family was who?
My wife, Karen, she was also 26. She was raised in Brazil by missionary parents. Huh? And my three children, Shannon, who was 6, Christine, who was 3, and Caleb, who wasn't quite a year old. And
wow.
He's now an assistant professor of anthropology at the University of Miami.
And then your wife and one of your daughters almost died from malaria. That was a frightening chapter in your book.
That's right. The first year that we were there, the first time we went in as a family, they got falciparum malaria and almost died. When we got out to the nearest town, the doctor took one look at my wife and said she won't make it through the night. She weighed 76 pounds.
And it wasn't just getting to the next town. What a adventure to try to find a boat and find these people that would transport you anywhere.
Yeah, it took us over a week to get out. It was a very difficult journey, and I realized that I had not done my homework. I didn't know where I was. I didn't know how to get out. I didn't have some of the skills we needed, but we made it somehow.
But they survived. Thank medicine, I guess.
Right? Yes, that's right. Thank medicine. I mean, there was a lot of prayer for them at the time, and it certainly at that time in my life, as a believer, I thought that really was good evidence that God was doing things in our lives, instead of actually looking at it as an unprepared person who shouldn't have been there in those circumstances without better knowledge of what he was getting into.
And how long did you stay there?
Well, I have lived in the villages for almost a total of 8 years over the last 30 years, but almost 8 full years living in the jungle.
Wow.
And you became, perhaps you are probably the leading expert, English-speaking expert on the Pinaha language. And I read that you were largely instrumental in making sure that the Pinaha now have an officially recognized reservation. So are they now free from encroachment because of that?
They are free from the river traders that used to bother them, which is a great step forward. The only problem now is that there are some Brazilian government officials who don't have anthropological training and who see the Pinaha living the way they do and think that they need modern houses. Huh. And so now they're trying to build modern houses for the Pinaha, which is very disruptive in their culture. I mean, modern Western houses, the Pinaha's houses are modern for them, but trying to build more elaborate structures, and that's difficult for them.
Now, to get back to how you went from this very fervent Christian missionary background to losing your faith, I think that you've given an interview and talked about how what the reaction was of the local people to the idea of Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple of different times that they confronted me about Jesus. One time in one village, the men came in one morning after I had talked to them about Jesus the night before, and they said, you know, Dan, we like you a lot. We know you've come here from a long ways. And that you're just living here with us because you want to tell us about Jesus. But we like you, but we don't want to hear about this Jesus anymore. I mean, he's not a Pinaha. You've never seen him, and we've never seen him. And we don't want somebody else telling us how to live. We're Pinaha. We're not Americans.
And they said, what color skin does he have?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they came in this at another village. I showed a film strip and started talking to them about Jesus. And they said, so, Dan, Jesus, now, is he dark like us, or is he light like you? And I said, I don't know. I haven't seen him. And they started asking other questions, and I said, I've never seen him. They said, well, surely your father saw him, or someone saw him. I said, I don't know anyone who's ever seen him. We have his word, the Bible. And they said, well, if you've never seen him, though, I mean, why would you tell us about him?
Touché.
Exactly. I mean, I did a recording one time of the Gospel of Mark where I had a Pinaha actually repeating after me, saying the Gospel of Mark and Pinaha. And I played it for a couple of guys, and they said, isn't that so-and-so talking? Yeah, he doesn't believe this stuff. So they weren't interested in hearing it either. They said, he's never seen this either. You know, so they have a very sweet attitude. They weren't, like, really hostile. They just weren't interested, and they said that it made no sense. And as I thought about it, I realized, you know, this really doesn't make any sense to them. I mean, they're happier than I am. They're better off than anybody I know in the churches that are giving me money to support, you know, to support this effort. I just don't know what it is I'm trying to do here.
Well, we are going to take a break and come back and find out what happened as you started to lose your faith, what the fallout was. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio. We're speaking with missionary-turned-nonbeliever Daniel Everett, author of Don't Sleep, There Are Snakes, Life and Language in the Amazonian Jungle. We'll be right back.
Hi, my name's Bob Sarefka from Chicago, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so.
Hmm.
And that's a little bit of Piraha people talking. That's a woman. Daniel will tell us what she says. I think she's talking about sickness there. We have on the phone with us from Chicago the author Daniel Everett. He wrote the book Don't Sleep, There Are Snakes, Life and Language in the Amazonian Jungle. And so she was talking about sickness in the Piraha language, is that right?
That's right. Actually, she was talking to me. I was the other voice talking to her in that clip about someone who had just died.
Well, you sound like a native there. You actually really went native then, didn't you, in more ways than one?
Well, I wouldn't say that I went native, but I did absorb and learn to respect a lot of their beliefs and their values. I'm by no means a Piraha, but I respect them tremendously, and I think that they have a lot more to teach me than I had to teach them.
Oh, in the last segment, we were talking about how you went there as a fervent missionary and gradually lost your faith. Tell us, how did that happen, and what was the fallout?
Well, the first step was to recognize that the message that I had for them was irrelevant. There was absolutely nothing Christianity had to offer, and I was well-trained in it, that they needed, as far as I could tell. And then I began to ask myself, what really of this message do I need? I mean, how much has Christianity played a role in the qualities of my life that I've tried to develop, and how much of it has just been me wishing that it played a role? And I began to realize that I was myself making up a story, a myth about my personal life and about the role that I thought God was playing in it. And as I began to read more, reflect on the Piraha's values, read more in linguistics and philosophy, and to think more about this, I realized that I could no longer sustain any belief in the supernatural. I mean, it wasn't a quick process, and it was a very fearful process because I would lose my income, I would lose perhaps my family, I would lose a lot of close friends, and all of that's happened since I've given up on Christianity, although relations with my family are being restored in some ways.
Did your wife not lose her faith either?
No, she's still a missionary with the Pitahas, and she believes that I have abandoned the faith unnecessarily. And when I told her one day, at just the two of us having dinner, that I no longer believed in this stuff and I just couldn't pretend that I did, she got up from the table and went and phoned all of our children to tell them that I was now an atheist.
Well, this the Dan who are here in the studio can certainly relate because you went through the same thing.
After years of evangelism and missionary work, I remember when I was an evangelist, it dawned on me that before you can sell salvation, first you have to sell damnation. You have to convince people that they are rotten sinners deserving of eternal torment. But you couldn't sell that to the Piraha.
No, I couldn't. I mean, my personal evangelism teacher at the Bible Institute of Los Angeles told me, you got to get them lost before you can get them saved, exactly what you just said. And the Piraha did not feel lost, they didn't look lost, and they certainly didn't think of themselves as lost, and the whole concept of needing something else just made no sense to them whatsoever.
So when you lost everything, really, by becoming an atheist, then you went back to school to become a linguist? Is that what happened?
I had been going to school to become a linguist when I wasn't in the village. I was going to a university in southern Brazil because this was the only way I could get authorization from the Brazilian government. They were no longer allowing this Wycliffe Bible translators in the villages, so that was the only way I could go, was as a student. And so when I made this decision, then I left and fortunately was able to get a job as a professor of linguistics at the University of Pittsburgh initially.
And now you're chair of Languages, Literatures, and Cultures at Illinois State University.
That's right.
And you've since then caused quite a ripple or a stir in the linguistic community with the discovery that the Piraha have lack something that every language was supposed to have.
That's right. They lack the property that Noam Chomsky has claimed to be universal in all languages called recursion. And that's caused a lot of debate. The recent issue of the journal of the Linguistic Society of America dedicates about one-third of its issue to a debate between me and my critics.
So they lack recursion, they lack God, they lack an afterlife, they lack heaven and a hell. No hell below us, above us only sky.
That's right. I tried to actually include some reference to these people exemplifying John Lennon's Imagine, but my editor at Pantheon didn't think that was such a great idea.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think it's a very nice idea, well, but we're fond of that song.
It jumped out of me when I read that paragraph, though.
I just think that was an illusion, obviously, as close as I could get to John Lennon. But if there's ever a group of people that exemplified Imagine, it's the Peter Hahn. And I'm sure there are others.
Well, I really appreciate your coming on the show. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker. Our guest today has been Daniel Everett. He's the author of Don't Sleep, There Are Snakes, Life and Language in the Amazonian Jungle. And your book's available in bookstores. Do you have website information?
Yes. If you just Google Dan Everett, I'm the first one that comes up.
With two T's.
Two T's, Everett.
And, it's a very, very fascinating story. It's a very courageous story, too.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks a lot for having me.
We also want to thank our engineer, Dan Ginsberg. We had three Dans on the show today. Free Thought Radio was recorded at the studio in Madison, Wisconsin. Go to our website, ffrf.org/radio, to hear this show again. All our shows are archived, or to sign up for the podcast. That's ffrf.org/radio.
And we encourage you to find out more information about the Freedom From Religion Foundation. You can go to ffrf.org, or you can phone at 1-800-335-4021, leave a message over the weekends, and request a sample issue of our newspaper, Free Thought Today. We have the August issue now. The September will be coming out. There's lots more information in it about all of our activism
and the convention coming up,
and state church separation and the convention. And we'll be back next week to talk with jazz great Ben Sidran, who is a Madison, Wisconsin original and a non-believer like so many talented musicians and composers. Tune in next week for more blasphemous broadcasting and rational radio.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.